We've just been introducing Abraham. We went through Romans chapter 4 and talked about everything that happened in Genesis up until now for those listening. And now we're going to get into the story of Abraham himself, which is going to be powerful because it's what everything in our faith is built on. So 11:27 is where we're going to start. Now, these are the generations of Terah. Terah begat Abram, Nahor, and Haran begat Lot. And again, this is all coming out of the line of Shem. Okay, so Noah had the three sons. This is the Shem line. And we had just, if you read chapter 11, it's got the generations of Shem starting at verse 10, and it goes through, and, you know, Shem has Arphaxad, and Arphaxad has Salah, and on and on and on. Okay, so eventually we get to Terah, and Terah is going to have these three sons, Abram, Nahor, and Haran begat Lot. So Lot is a nephew of Abram, and he's going to become, obviously, a big character here, and you all know about that already. But we're going to review it. And Haran died before his father Terah in the land of his nativity in Ur of the Chaldees. One thing I learned about Ur of the Chaldees is that it is the center of moon worship. And they're worshiping, obviously, nature. And when you think about how bright the stars are in a place like the desert, especially without all the artificial light, you know, that we have now, I mean, you could almost kind of see how one would want to worship nature or the stars and the moon. Sure. Because it's just so gorgeous, it's so beautiful, and I believe, just like the Egyptians, these ancient cultures, they saw there were patterns, and you could actually predict things based on the, you know, astronomy, and the stars were just so vivid, and the moon was so vivid, and you could see the patterns, and I could just imagine the temptation to worship the stars and the moon. But Ur of the Chaldees was the moon worship center, and there were these, even though we just got rid of the big tower up to heaven, Babel thing, this is kind of in that same area. I think it's a little different area, but Ur is in today's Iraq, I believe, Ur is where they do still have, we actually know it was a physical place based on the archaeologists, you know, digging stuff up, and there's actually these ziggurats, which Jim's talked about, you know, over the years, but they're like pyramids, and they would basically go up there and kind of divine and try to communicate with the gods, god of the moon, and that was basically the culture of the time, is this idol-worshipping culture who's worshipping the creation, not the creator. And so this is what's just normal. Again, men are only evil continually, or they're in this remnant faith category, but most of the time, these people are just, you know, they're basically after, you know, the lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, pride of life. You know, that's how everybody's living. So, Abram and Nahor took them wives. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai, and the name of Nahor's wife, Milcah, and the daughter of Haran, the father of Milcah, and the father of Iscah. But Sarai was barren, and she had no child, which is interesting that she was barren. There's tons of scriptures on God using people who seem to be fruitless. You know, the seeing, oh, barren, Jim's got a tape on that, which is completely relatable to us. I think all of us, we feel like that at times, we're barren. And Terah took Abram his son, and Lot the son of Haran his son's son, and Sarai his daughter-in-law, his son Abram's wife, and they went forth with them from Ur of the Chaldees to go into the land of Canaan. So they left Ur to go to Canaan. That's where they were headed, and it's kind of like a almost like a upside down U. You know, they're leaving one area of Mesopotamia, Ur of the Chaldees. They're going up through Haran and then back down to Canaan. But they came into the land of Haran and dwelt there, which is kind of interesting. You know, God called Abram. This is clear. You can look at some of the commentary even just in the New Testament on this story. But God called Abram out of Ur to go to Canaan, and he camps out in Haran, and he goes with his family So, and it's just interesting. And the days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. And in these people's lives, as you can see, we had guys living 900 plus years, and God, as he's after the flood, kind of shortening things, people are living fewer and fewer years. And so, verse 12, "Now the Lord had said unto Abram, get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred and from thy father's house unto a land that I will show you." So again, out of the familiar into the unfamiliar. "And I will make of you a great nation." And again, this is just an individual little guy, you know, just nothing. He's a nothing. And God's giving him these awesome promises. "And I will bless you and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing." And this is, man, this is encouraging. He's hearing God speak to him personally and make these awesome promises. "And I will bless them that bless thee, and curse him that curseth thee. And in thee shall all families of the earth be blessed." And that's powerful. And his name is still known to this day. I mean, he's probably the most famous father of faith character, I mean, for Christianity, Judaism, and, you know, the Muslim faith. All of them count Abraham as this really big deal. And this is the guy. This is how it all started. This promise right here, personally to this one individual character who lived in history. It's pretty awesome. "So Abram departed as the Lord had spoken unto him, and Lot went with him, and Abram was 75 years old when he departed out of Haran," which is kind of old. I don't know when God initially spoke to him, how old he was, but 75, and he's finally leaving. He's leaving Haran now. So he called out of Ur, goes towards Canaan, but he stops in Haran. And finally, and he's still got his family with him, even though he said to leave your kindred and your father's house. But he leaves. He doesn't really obey because he keeps his father with him going up to Haran. I don't know what he does. He kind of piddles around there. Yeah. And then he ends up in Haran, and he still takes Lot with him, you know. And so I wouldn't say he's perfectly obeying the call, but he's kind of stumbling through it, which is very relatable. "And Abram took Sarai his wife, and Lot his brother's son, and all their substance that they had gathered, and the souls that they had gotten in Haran, and they went forth to go into the land of Canaan, and into the land of Canaan they came. And Abram passed through the land unto a place of Sichem," or I think it's Shechem, "unto the plain of Moreh, and the Canaanite was then in the land. And the Lord appeared unto Abram and said, unto thy seed will I give this land. And there builded he an altar unto the Lord who appeared unto him." And you kind of see here, I was noticing this as I was reading this, but, you know, all of us have stories where God's given us a word, right? We all have those stories. God gives you a promise, or he calls you into faith or into walking with him. And it sometimes can start out as a very general, vague kind of word. But then it maybe over time, as you walk this thing out and you're obeying step by step, he gives you more specific, you know, he kind of shapes the promise a lot more specifically. And so that's what he's got going here, is that, you know, now he's being specific. I'm going to give you this land, you know, and again, this land is full of Canaanites. It's got enemies all over the place. So it does not look apparent that he's going to, like, really be successful in this land. It's being contended for by people who are already occupying it. And so he makes this altar, and he gets this word from God that's more specific. And God's going to keep talking to him. You know, he's going to keep on kind of unfolding that promise for him as he walks through all these different adventures. "And he removed from thence unto a mountain on the east of Bethel, and pitched his tent, having Bethel on the west and Hai on the east. And there he built an altar unto the Lord, and called upon the name of the Lord." So he's building these altars. He's basically kind of like marking the territory. He's making these memorials to God's words to him, and he's giving worship and thanks back to God, which is awesome. And so It's just very similar, though, to what we had before with, you know, Enos, who is the son of Seth. But that race of people who are spiritually a spiritual race, who are choosing to live differently. They're calling upon the name of the Lord. They have a relationship with the Lord, and they're walking in this land full of sinful, evil people, them being part of that. And they're just walking by faith. And it's a pattern of what we're doing. I was thinking about my own testimony as I was looking at this story, and I was thinking about how, you know, for me, I was basically, my familiarity was, I grew up Methodist and didn't really mean a whole lot to me. I went to church every week and skipped as much as I possibly could. And, you know, I was one of those child of divorce situations. I was 15, my parents split up. And I just basically lived a complete heathen lifestyle. But I was like Eddie Haskell. Like, I'd always look clean. I made really good grades. And, you know, I'm like completely just living a double life. You know, Pastor Jim tells his story about sneaking out the window. I didn't have to sneak out the window because I could just tell my mom I was at my dad's house, or my dad was at my mom's house. And I was just always just basically raising hell, you know, just, pardon the French, but just like really not doing right. So, and I won't go into specifics, but I wanted to be great. You know, I wanted to be awesome. That's why I went to A&M. I was in the Corps. I got all these illusions in my head. I was actually wanting to be like Tom Cruise. You know, even though I was a little kind of pipsqueak of a guy, I wanted to be a Navy fighter pilot. And I wanted to get an ROTC scholarship and go through the Corps. And that's how I met Jeff, actually. You know, he was my upperclassman. And which is funny, because I could not stand Jeff at the time. Could not. He was Mr. Flood to me, you know. And he was hazing me, you know, like he was yelling at me. And him and his buddies, you know, they just loved hazing us. And in that first year when I was a freshman, that's where I got saved. And I got saved because I was going through a really big crisis. Like, some of my sins were catching up with me. And I won't go into specifics there, but let's just say I thought my life was in complete danger. I thought that I had a specific moment where I thought that I was gonna basically die of some disease. And for a whole weekend, I was basically facing my own death. And this was 1994, and basically through that, I kind of had one of those moments where I couldn't sleep because I was so terrorized, like Luther, you know, terrorized that I was going to die. And so I just cried out to God. Even my Methodist faith knew that there was something probably there. And I just, basically, I think God used what I had, because I had this peace come over me. And I think I saw a magnet on a fridge that had the footsteps, you know, the footsteps poem. But I did have this vision that God was carrying me on the sand. And I had a peace. I fell asleep. The next morning, I got great news, confirmed that I wasn't going to die. And it's crazy, because I made all these promises. I'm like, God, if you get me out of this jam, I will serve you the rest of my life. And I completely forgot all of those promises once I got the good news. Like, I was excited, but then 2 months, 3 months later, I was just as big of a sinner. I mean, outwardly, I was always a sinner, but outwardly sinning as much as I ever had. And anyway, it's just interesting, because like, I was not following. God was calling me out of that familiar world I lived in, you know, to try to be this great, you know, military officer or whatever. And God called me, and then I think I just, you know, forgot everything. And I'm right back on the same path, just chasing girls and whatever. And I actually did meet my wife at that time. She was back then just a girl that I thought was really cute. And so, yeah, she is.
No reason to chase wasn't proven.
That's right. But it's just funny how God uses your stupid fumbling and stumbling, you know, to bless you, you know. And anyway, I just relate with this story, right? Abraham is just funny. So Abram journeys. He's basically on this, I think it's an adventure, right? He's got this call and this hope, but he's going to face so much adversity as he's walking through this land. And he's going on toward the south, and there was a famine in the land, and Abram went down into Egypt to sojourn there, for the famine was grievous in the land. And it came to pass, when he was come near to enter into Egypt, that he said unto Sarai his wife, Behold, now I know that you are a fair woman to look upon. Therefore it shall come to pass, when the Egyptians shall see thee, that they shall say, This is his wife, and they will kill me, but they will save you alive. Say, I pray thee, thou art my sister, that it may be well with me for your sake, and my soul shall live because of you. And it came to pass that when Abram was come into Egypt, the Egyptians beheld the woman, that she was very fair. The princes also of Pharaoh saw her and commended her before Pharaoh, and the woman was taken into Pharaoh's house. And he entreated Abram for well for her sake. And he had sheep and oxen and he asses and men servants and maid servants and she asses and camels. And the Lord plagued Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarai, Abram's wife. It's like exactly what God promised. By none of Abram's doing, if you bless Abram, you're going to be blessed. But if you curse Abram, you're going to be cursed. And that just happens. That was just something God did. And so this promise is real. So Pharaoh, this tyrant, calls Abram and says, What is this that you have done to me? Why didn't you tell me that she was your wife? Why did you say she's your sister, or she's my sister? So I might have taken her to me to wife. Now therefore, behold your wife, take her and go your way. And Pharaoh commanded his men concerning him, and they sent him away and his wife and all that he had. And so it's just interesting here. He's kind of like that Eddie Haskell character. You know, he's lying. It's very natural. He's trying to protect himself. And, you know, it's like God calls him into this land, and in that land you've got enemies. And you've got no apparent, like, he didn't roll out the red carpet for Abram to just basically set up shop and just give him that inheritance. He comes into a land full of enemies, and there's a famine. Like, there's no way for him to physically survive. And you'd think the father of faith, like, would just rain manna down or do something, provide, you know, livestock or meat or something for him to eat. But there was nothing for him to live on. His life was at stake. Like, he just very naturally had to escape down into Egypt. That was the natural thing to do. But it's just interesting because this wasn't like a faith move. He's just kind of stumbling around, and, you know, he shows up where God tells him to, and there's no sign of God being there helping him to thrive and sustain. So he kind of gets forced down into Egypt, and then he's just kind of lying, half lie, because she is his half sister. But I just think this whole thing's kind of funny, you know? Like, there's just all this adversity, even though God has called him to do specific things, it seems as if he's not there. Does that relate with you guys at all? Like, God calls you into something? So, I mean, that's totally how I felt. Like, my own story, like, my testimony was, you know, I got called into walking with the Lord, and I just hit obstacle after obstacle, you know. Going back to kind of how I started, I found, you know, where I initially started to kind of get fed spiritually were, you know, I went to these Baptist churches. And I would always get kind of built up on salvation, but then I would get condemned because my life just didn't reflect what I was getting excited about on Sundays. And so I just had these big swings, ups and downs, and, you know, it was just that all the things that I was getting excited about, I didn't see in my reality, if that makes sense. Like, I just didn't see the fruit of it. And so I was just super frustrated for like 2 years, and I faced all sorts of adversity in that time. Most of it was my own doing, but I relate with this story because of, you get a promise, God calls you, and then it's like immediately you're almost like into trouble. famine, enemies, and, you know, your wife's kidnapped. And so that's definitely my story. So back to Abram. Abram went up, chapter 13, out of Egypt, he and his wife and all that he had, and Lot with him, into the south. And Abram was very rich in cattle and silver and in gold. And that's what happens. You know, God, if he says you're going to be blessed, you're going to be blessed. That's why he was blessed. God promised. And there's more at stake here than Abram just getting a whole bunch of stuff. So God's doing something here. And he went on his journeys from the south, even to Bethel, back to where he initially started, to the place where his tent had been at the beginning, between Bethel and Hai, unto the place of the altar, which he had made there at the first. And there Abram called on the name of the Lord. And so, I don't know if you guys have these moments in your life where you kind of come back to where God shows you something in the beginning, and you go back there, kind of like full circle, and you can reflect on all the things that God's done in your life since the last time you were there and God spoke to you. But I've had some of these moments, even this last year. One moment was where when I was in college, I finally found Pastor Jim. And I believe God led me to this church because, I was kind of struggling with, how am I going to get fed? And what is church? Like, I just wasn't getting... I was asking these questions like, you know, who's got the truth? Because I grew up Methodist, and I was going to these Baptist churches, and I found the Bible churches, and I just felt like it was like there was just too much kind of willpower involved, and I didn't have the willpower. one of the things that happened was I was basically coming back into the dorm one night, my sophomore year, and I ran into Tim, you know, Stevenson and Jeff, and they were listening to a Pastor Jim tape. And not to say that everybody has to find Pastor Jim, but for me, that was the first time that I was able to find like a authoritative yet also just restful sort of message of the gospel. Like, I just remember him saying stuff like, God likes me, you know, and just laughing and just loose. And I wasn't used to that. Like, every time I went to church, it was sweating and fire and brimstone. And like, I just found what he was saying super refreshing. And I was like, I can finally just give up and be real with God that, hey man, I'm really sinful, but is there a place for me? You know? And I felt like that was a really big moment in my faith. And after that, within a year or two, I remember reading in the scriptures, I read a verse, I think it's Matthew 19:29, if I remember correctly, but it's basically, if you believe that, it basically said, if you follow me, I will give, and you give up father, mother, wife, sister, brother, all of that, all your familiar stuff, and you follow me, I will give you all of that stuff and lands and all these things, and tenfold or hundredfold, something like that. And I remember God challenging me when I was in my dorm. This was when I was getting ready for my, like, to start my first job. I was trying to figure out what I was going to do. God gave me that word, and I said, I believe it. And I went to a Bible study that night, and I told everybody in College Station, I'm like, I am going to be, a missionary or something, because I'm following Jesus. And everybody at the time, it seems like, in my Christian circle down at A&M, which they were really awesome people, but they, everybody was getting into missions. You know, that was kind of the thing to do. And so I started, when I came back up to Fort Worth, I would talk to, you know, Jim or Robert. I'm like, I think I'm supposed to be a missionary. And I was all excited, because I felt like I really had a promise from God that he was going to bless me with hundredfold of what I was going after with a career. I'd already left the officer thing because I had super just failure after failure in the Corps and disappointments, and my eyes were bad and flat-footed and all these things. I was on ADD medication in high school, so that disqualified me. I had all these things that just massive fail. It was like God was cutting my Tower of Babel off, you know. And I just, in those failures, I felt like God would come through with these promises, kind of like Abraham. And I don't know why I'm going into all this, but this is my story. I'm telling you why it's relatable, so maybe you can relate. And I just remember at that time, there was an opportunity to go to China. And so I went with Campus Crusade and some guys from A&M and also UT. We went to China, and it was like super top secret, but we're going there to kind of like plant seeds for a new church. And I did this in 98, right as I was about to come out of college. And one of the places that we stopped for our briefing was Pepperdine. We did like a kind of like a pre-China crash course. You have to learn about the culture and stuff. And I just remember looking at the Pacific Ocean on that beautiful Pepperdine campus, and I was just like, wow, God is so good. I'm about to go over to China. It may have been on the way back. It might have been on the return. I think on the way there, we stopped and we were at TCU. On the way back, we were at Pepperdine. And anyway, point is, I just had this moment where I was like, God, what are you going to do with my life? You know, like, it's a blank slate. I don't know where I'm going, but I'm just so excited. And that full circle moment came this last year because my daughter is at Pepperdine, and we were moving her in, and we've just had adversity after adversity with her going there. I mean, with COVID and just all sorts of, she's just had all sorts of kind of like disappointments in that whole experience. It's not been what she thought it was going to be, but we're blessed, you know. And I remember sitting in about the same spot on campus, looking down that, I mean, it's beautiful. You have this green grass, and you know, Melissa. Yeah, this green grass just goes down, and you just see the Pacific Ocean. You feel like you can almost see China, you know, across. You can't, but it's just so gorgeous. And you just have these moments in life where God kind of, you know, he showed me this last August, because it had been about 23 years exactly. It was August to August. And he has just shown me how faithful he's been. Because I didn't know at the time in 98 that I was going to get married. I didn't know if I was going to be a missionary or not. Which that's its own funny story. And I didn't know if I was going to be successful or not. In God's eyes. Like, that's what I cared about. I didn't want to be a complete fail. I didn't want to not be a Christian, because I felt like I could easily not be, because I've done that before too. And the statistics are real. Like, when you're in college, I think 4% of college students still have a strong faith where they're going to church 10 years later. And I didn't want that. I wanted to be a real Christian. And that's still what I want to be. I just want to be a real Christian. And I just saw God's faithfulness, you know, with my daughter. She's still a believer, thankfully. And you know, she's going strong, and our family's not perfect, but just seeing God be faithful with three daughters and my wife, and you know, we're still following the Lord. And it's just neat when God brings you full circle. You know, he shows you these moments. And anyway, that's my kind of example of that. But Abram's back in the same place where God had first showed him the specific land he was going to take over, or God was going to give him to inherit. And anyway, there Abram called on the name of the Lord. And Lot also, which went with Abram, and he had flocks and herds and tents. And the land was not able to bear them, that they might dwell together, for their substance was great, so that they could not dwell together. Lots of conflict. And there was a strife between the herdmen of Abram's cattle and the herdmen of Lot's cattle. And the Canaanite and the Perizzite dwelt then in the land too. So he's not only got conflict like outside of his family, he's got conflict in his family. And Abram said to Lot, and this is just beautiful, "Let there be no strife, I pray thee, between me and you, and between my herdmen and your herdmen, for we be brethren. Is not the whole land before you? Separate yourself, I pray you, from me. If you will take the left hand, then I will go to the right. Or if you depart to the right hand, then I will go to the left." And that's just a sign of Abraham's or Abram's faith already just being so big that he could, like, basically let Lot have the first choice and just know that God was still going to bless him. He wasn't going to get cheated, you know. And how often are you in some sort of, like, I mean, all the time, there's these contentious battles, and I'm just like, I just want to get in there and get mine, you know, and make sure, like, if there's a business situation, you know, in sales, we have a lot of overlap. Like, I'll put some work in, say, on a hospital or a surgeon, and we'll get them sold, but that surgeon may move, or they may go to multiple hospitals, and I may not get credit. Right now, with COVID, right now, like, we have We have surgeons moving because of COVID. Certain hospitals are basically so short-staffed, and that's a whole other thing. and or they just don't have beds. And so they're moving their surgeries to another hospital, and it's just so easy to get caught up in, well, am I going to get credit for all the work I'm doing? You know, if you're walking by faith, you just know you're going to be blessed. God will work out all the details. You take whatever you feel like you want, and then I'll get the leftovers. And Abram knew that he was going to be blessed. I just think that's really beautiful. And I'm convicted by that. So Lot lifts up his eyes and beheld all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, even as the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, as thou comest unto Zoar. Then Lot chose him all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated themselves the one from the other. And it's interesting just how there's two ways to look at it, you know, especially if you're in like a conflict and you're contending for, you know, scarce resources. There's two ways to judge the value of it. You know, one way is to just like try to get all you can, and you know, you get the first choice because I was here first. I'm the uncle. You know, I'm older than you, and you can base everything off of like what we see with Lot. What's he basing his decision on? You know, it looks better. It appears better. You know, the image of it is that it's well watered, and it's just like, I don't know. When you think about the spirit that's in the world, it says there's just three things: lust of the eyes, lust of the flesh, and the pride of life. You know, and you just think about how now today in our culture, how everything is based on appearance and image, and you know, these things we stare into. It's all image. You know, Instagram and Snap, Face Chat, and all that stuff. You know, just it's all, everything is being, everyone's attention is being manipulated based on just image. You know, and you just think about how that's the path Lot chose. You know, he's not really walking after a promise. He's walking after what's looks good. And we know about that area too. What's that area like that he chooses? That area of Sodom. They're completely after lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, pride of life. You know, that's what they're all about. So Abram dwelled in the land of Canaan. He got the leftovers. The second choice. Yeah, what was that?
He dropped a lot of stuff.
They dropped last week.
Really?
Yeah, it shook the building.
Yeah. It was worse.
It was way worse.
Are they doing construction? Huh.
Judah said it was an air conditioning unit that
set with a fire or something.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, right? That sounds all right.
Sounded good anyway.
Yeah, no.
It would have been God. You never know.
It could have been.
Yes. Speak, Lord, for your servant.
Amen. Okay, so Abram dwelled in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelled in the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent towards Sodom. And the men of Sodom, and also it's interesting, the east and west, we've talked about this before, but you know, the Adam and Eve were driven east out of the garden, and it's kind of like when you're leaving God's presence, you go east. And when you're coming back, like even in the, and I'm not making this up, obviously people have commented on this for thousands of years, but when you go into the temple, you're going west. You're going toward God. You're going toward the Holy of Holies. You're going west. It's interesting. You know, Paul was told to go west, young man. So, but the men of Sodom were wicked and sinners before the Lord exceedingly. Okay, so we know about this group of people. And the Lord said unto Abram, after that Lot was separated unto him, so when he gets alone and he's following that promise that God initially gave him, leave your kindred, leave your family, and he's revealing and unfolding more of that promise. Lift up now your eyes and look from the place where you are northward and southward and eastward and westward. For all the land which you see, to thee will I give it, and to your seed forever. And he's really expanding on this promise. Like before, he just said, this is the land. And before that, he just said, go into the land of Canaan. Then he was specific. And now he's really just letting him kind of imagine and daydream about all the expansive, like, inheritance he's going to gain. For all the land which you see, to thee will I give it, and to your seed forever. and I will make your seed as the dust of the earth, so that if a man can number the dust of the earth, then shall your seed also be numbered. Arise, walk through the land in the length of it and in the breadth of it, for I will give it unto thee. Then Abram removed his tent and came and dwelt in the plain of Mamre, which is in Hebron, and built there an altar unto the Lord. So he's just having these, you know, unveilings of the promise, and they're progressively becoming more and more just bigger and more specific. And so, again, like my own story, I'm kind of trying to weave these two together. When, my own story, I came back from China, ended up getting married within a year. The story on the missionary stuff was I had a call, and I answered the call in my spirit to follow the Lord into wherever He was going to take me. And I'm just a knucklehead, don't know what I'm doing. So I was talking to Pastor Jim about it, and he didn't really give me any kind of validation of that. He just kind of blew it off. And the church was a lot busier back then. You know, so I would go up to him after church and just ask him, hey, I want to plug into, you know, I think they had Hope for Africa at the time. I want to do some stuff like that. I think Danny had gone off to Africa for 6 months, and Marshall and Jackie were there. I was like, I want to do something like that. And I think he just said, you know, go talk to Robert. And so I talked to Robert, and Robert was like, oh, yeah, like, go. Like, if God's calling you, go, you know. And I was like, now that's kind of scary. It's kind of scary to go.
Called you up.
Yeah. And then I talked to Jim Moore, and Jim was like, well, do you have any debts? And I said, well, actually, I do. I've got school loans, because I was really bad. My parents actually had saved up money for my college, and I, you know, had this new girlfriend, who's now my wife. But I just took advantage of my mom's credit card, and I just ran up all these debts on the credit card, so much so that she had to use my college money to pay for the credit card debt. Again, she's a single mom at this point. She left my dad. And so, which I forgive all of them for that. But I had, all of a sudden, had to take out school loans. And so I had debt for the first time. And Jim was like, if you have debt, you cannot just go out on the mission field. But you at least need to take care of that first. So I got my first job in sales to pay for that debt. But I was always thinking about, man, I need to save up to get married, and we need to get like some kind of sustainable living going. You know, we got to be able to pay bills. And then I just completely lost the whole idea of going into the mission field. You get into your job and career, and you're just one thing after the next, distraction. But I feel like God's been faithful in all of this mess. Like, I've not been faithful on God's call to my life, but I do feel like God's been faithful. And I'm able to share my testimony. I've gone to Africa 5 times and been able to share my testimony and be a part of that ministry. And, this today, I don't know what this is. I don't know if I'm going to keep teaching. I don't know if I'm supposed to do this. I'm just kind of doing what I'm called to do to this Sunday, but I may not teach next month, you know, and that's fine. So, like, I just feel like God's doing something. I just don't know exactly what He's doing. And I don't know how all of you all sit with where God's called you, but it's unfamiliar. You know, it's kind of weird, you know. And so, that's, I believe, the pattern of what we see with Abram. But God does, as you take a step, God does show you more of what it is you're doing, and you understand more. I do know that in my spirit, and I was sharing this with Jeff yesterday. There's a few moments in my life since I kind of completely frittered away the call of God to go to the mission field. Being just sitting under Pastor Jim's teaching and being discipled for 25 years, there's been a few moments where he's just completely, things he said, God's used him, it's not Jim, but things Pastor Jim said in my life just set me off on a different course. Completely, because again, I'm just a knucklehead. But he's encouraged. Like, I remember going to his house once. We had house church there when the Antoines. We had a house church with them for a while, and then that house church kind of fizzled, whatever. And then Pastor Jim took over. And I remember going into Pastor Jim's house this was like 2002, something like that, and seeing all the books everywhere on the wall, you know, and I was just like, wow, because I never read. I always cheated, I cheated my way through college. I just studied for the test, crammed, took the test, and then that was it. I never learned anything, but I just remember seeing Pastor Jim's books, and I was like, I want that. I want to learn stuff. There's value in learning things, you know, and that changed my life around 2003. I started reading, like, just simple stuff, reading the biography of Luther, reading the Bible, actually reading it. But he's changed the course of my life in so many different ways, and it's moments like that or little things he said to me. He told me once we were heading to a Bible study where he told me, you know, this is like 2007, 2008, he said, if you want to be a teacher, you have to study twice as hard as anyone else. You can't just study the Bible. You've got to study everything that the enemy says too. And maybe that was just a word for me, but I kind of took that, and that's why I really love reading. That was not me at all before. Before I was completely not into reading anything. But I feel like that was maybe a word that Jim gave me, and it fired me up. It got me excited. And so when I started going to these homeschool book fairs, you know, around that same time so we could learn how to teach our kids at home, I was going for me. I was going to these talks on, you know, classical education and what did Plato say and how is that something that relates to the life of a Christian, and all these things I started kind of opening up to, and it's been awesome. And I feel like it's going to prepare me in some way for where we're going, because the world is getting crazier and crazier, less rational, and it's kind of like, I do believe the time is short, in that as the world is getting darker and darker, you're going to need little lights out in the world who can give hope to people. And sometimes you have to be able to communicate in their language. You can't just use the Bible language because they don't know it. And so what Jim has encouraged me to do over the last 20 years, I believe is continuing, and it's preparing us for something that we don't even know. You know, who knows why I study all I do, but I think it's being prepared for something. And I'm blessed by it. But I've had failure after failure over the last 20 years. I mean, I've had massive failures. I spent like my whole fortune and time and effort getting an MBA and earning a 4.0, like doing all the things, getting my dream job. I went into management consulting. And then 9 months later, getting fired, basically laid off, because it was 2008, financial crisis. And basically just kind of running back into my sales career with my tail between my legs and just feeling like a massive failure. And like, why did I spend all that time and money? And I don't know. I still don't have answers to these questions, but it's like Abram. You know, he's facing adversity. He's got enemies. He's got strife. He's got his wife being kidnapped. He's got all this adversity, and it's confusing. You know, he's promised him a seed, and he doesn't even have a kid. You know, it's like, God, what are you doing? You've promised that you're going to do all these. Because I have calls on my life. I feel like God's giving me words, but I don't see the fruit of it. You know, I don't see the ministry. I don't see, you know, any of the things that I feel like God's called me to. I don't see it. It's like, how are you going to do this, God? Like, I feel like Abram. I don't see it. Does that relate with anybody here?
Totally, yeah.
Okay. I'm just babbling up here, but anyway, that's kind of what was on my heart today, is that this Abram faith is all about being tested, and it's about having a word and a promise in the face of everything that's opposite of that word. So, it's 10:20. Can I go 5 more minutes? And then we'll stop. Okay. Yeah. But I want to hear if I believe he is speaking through it. The word is powerful in and of itself. So, chapter 14. So, Abram is getting more and more built up by these words and these times of the Lord, and he's getting the promise kind of expounded to him. And then he says, it came to pass in the days of Amraphel, king of Shinar, Arioch, king of Elasar, Chedorlaomer, I always think of cheddar cheese with him. Chedorlaomer, king of Elam, and Tidal, king of nations, that these made war with Bera, king of Sodom, and with Bersha, king of Gomorrah, Shinab, king of Admah, and Shemeber, king of Zeboim, and the king of Bela, which is Zoar. A bunch of names. So you have basically four kings led by Chedorlaomer having war with these other five kings. And part of those five kings that are being attacked by the four are the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah. It's kind of interesting because we have certain thoughts about Sodom and Gomorrah. I mean, those are bad people. So these are all bad people. And all these were joined together in the valley or vale of Siddim, which is the Salt Sea. 12 years they served Chedorlaomer, and the 13th year they rebelled. And I'm not going to read all of this stuff, but basically what you have here is there's this war between kings, this political battle, and Abram gets caught up in this because Lot is taken as a captive as the city of Sodom is sacked, you know, and they get all the goods and they take the wives and the lot of the property, the servants, and Lot himself with this the sacking of Sodom. The king of Sodom is taken, king of Gomorrah, and they're all being basically just pummeled by this Chedorlaomer confederacy. The four kings are attacking the five. And so Abram, with his faith, he goes, let's see, we'll pick up, there were slime pits, and Abram goes to the rescue, okay? So Abram's got faith, so he has courage. And let's see here, I'm going to pick it up at verse 11. And they took all the goods of Sodom and Gomorrah and all their victuals and went their way. And they took Lot, Abram's brother's son, who dwelt in Sodom, and his goods, and departed. And there came one that had escaped, and told Abram the Hebrew, for he dwelt in the plain of Mamre the Amorite, the brother of Eshcol, and the brother of Aner, and these were confederate with Abram. And when Abram heard that his brother was taken captive, he armed his trained servants, born in his own house, 318. So he's got like a huge company of people that he's responsible for. And he pursued them unto Dan. And he divided himself against them, he and his servants, by night, and smote them, and pursued them unto Hobah, which is on the left hand of Damascus. I mean, I imagine this being like a big old, like Braveheart kind of scenario. Like 318 guys, and they're going up against these kings and all of the forces that they have with them, and they're bullies. They're taking, you know, the Sodom and Gomorrahites, and he's going to get Lot. You know, so he's getting tangled up with all these political, you know, battles that are going on. And he brought back all the goods, and he pursues them, just amazing, all the courage that went with that, and the wisdom by dividing his people to get the goods and the people back. And he brought back all the goods, and also brought again his brother Lot and his goods, and the women also, and the people. And the king of Sodom went out to meet him after his return from the slaughter of Chedorlaomer and of the kings that were with him at the valley of Sheveh, which is the king's dale. And this is an interesting one. This is like out of nowhere you have this character come on the scene. And Melchizedek, king of Salem, which means shalom, right? Salem, peace. Melchizedek, king of Salem or shalom, brought forth bread and wine, and he was the priest of the Most High God. And he blessed him and said, "Blessed be Abram of the Most High God, possessor of heaven and earth. And blessed be the Most High God, which hath delivered thine enemies into thy hand." And he gave him tithes of all. First time we hear about tithes. And the king of Sodom said unto Abram, "Give me the persons and take the goods to yourself." And Abram said to the king of Sodom, "I have lifted up my hand unto the Lord, the Most High God, the possessor of heaven and earth," so spiritual things and material things, "that I will not take from a thread even to a shoe latchet, and that I will not take anything that is thine, lest you should say, I have made Abram rich." So he's not taking any bribes. Interestingly, right now, I was thinking about bribes this morning. I'm bribing my children to read the Bible. Hope that's not sinful, but we're doing the Bible in a year, and I pay them. I'm actually had to Venmo my daughter this morning because she went through the first month completely. So I'm like, I'll bribe for that. But you're not supposed to bribe. Save only that which the young men have eaten and the portion of the men which went with me, Aner, Eshcol, and Mamre, let them take their portion. And I'll end with this last verse. After these things, the word of the Lord came unto Abram in a vision, saying, "Fear not, Abram, I am your shield and your exceeding great reward." And that's where we'll leave it, but that's where Abram starts kind of, it's like that truth and honesty. God's giving him that promise again and telling him more about the promise. Fear not, I'm your shield and your exceeding great reward, which he just experienced with that victory he had over the Chedorlaomer kings and the army and getting Lot and the goods back. I mean, he's the hero of that story, kind of, or he is. And God's showing him, I'm your shield. I'm your exceeding great reward. You know, and it's like that meant something to him then because he had walked through all of that, whereas before he didn't tell him that part. You know, he told him that as he was walking through in obedience, but that obedience is really just believing. He's faithful. He's full of faith and walking through all these adventures with that promise. And God, as he's doing that, is giving him more and more and more. And you're going to see in chapter 15, it's basically just Abram and God back and forth talking and God giving him more detail about the promise and what's going to happen in the future. So we are priest kings, right? We're in that order of Melchizedek, which it says in Hebrews. And that's a whole big theological truth and mystery that I don't fully understand, but it's interesting that God calls us to be not just priests, but priest kings. You know, that we're in that same order of, you know, we're to be faithful stewards and responsible over whatever we have on earth, like kings over our little kingdom. It could be a small kingdom, but, you know, we are to be faithful over the earth, material things, that's God in us, that's ruling over those material things. But he's also made us priests where we can also be, you know, reconciling people to the Father in a spiritual sense. So we're not just of the earth, but we're also not just of the Spirit. We're both. That's Jesus in us, right? Son of man, son of God. So that Melchizedek priesthood is powerful, you know, and you see as the Bible goes on, and Edersheim talks about this, but the priesthood and the kingship or the kingdom is separated. You have the priesthood of Aaron that really represents that priesthood of God, which is a true one, that reconciles people and atones for their sin. And that's all ministered through the priesthood. And then you have that picture of the true kingship through David of, you know, basically hearing God, ruling, executing, you know, praise. All of that was on this earth. It wasn't just spiritual. It was a kingship that brought heaven on earth in reality. I mean, you have those two pictures and they come together in Christ and it's just like beautiful. But this Melchizedek is like both at once. It's like it just shows up on the scene out of nowhere. I've heard somebody say that he was either the very end of the Shem line, like he actually overlapped with Shem, or he was Shem himself. There's been people who've actually studied this out, and they say they can prove that this is actually Shem, who was the king of Melchizedek. But he was alive. Like, if you look at the chronology, and Pastor Jim, I talked to him about this once, but he verified, you know, that Shem was contemporary with Abram. So he could have actually, they could have spoken. So they had direct contact, but it's interesting who Melchizedek was. Maybe he was just an angel of the Lord, I don't know. But it's an interesting kind of just out of nowhere, just insertion into the story. So God's good. I don't know if you were blessed, but I love the story of Abraham just being called out of the familiar and into some new promise that's unfamiliar and it's by faith, unseen. So.